This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it! The phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, east of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? You've got clutter and junk piling up all over your house? Did you miss trash day? Listen, man, it's time for some spring cleaning. Throw out that garbage. What do you mean you'll start by deleting old episodes of our shitty rock and roll podcast? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on?
I said,
Stupid Girl by Garbage? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Stupid Girl by 90s alt rockers Garbage. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
What's up, music nerds? Are you tired of wading through a sea of mediocre music, desperately seeking to find a glimmer of greatness? You're in luck. My name is Mark, and I am the host of the podcast, Songs That Don't Suck. Each week, I scour the depths of new music playlists to unearth hidden gems that defy the trends and deliver pure sonic bliss. No matter the genre, if it doesn't suck, it's on my radar. So find us on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe today. And as always, keep searching for and listening to Songs That Don't Suck.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching?
I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line, Rico Goodnew. How the hell are you?
God damn it, I'm good, man. How are you?
Not too shabby, man. Ready for some rock and roll news.
We have a okay, so before we get to part two of our fun little album game, you remember last time we did Loudwired had their favorite album for each artist, and then you, in your ultimate knowledge, decided if they were correct or not. Well, before we get to this week, which is the worst album, I have another little thought experiment that I want to ask you about, and this could be like a 15-second conversation, but I thought it was interesting. Loudwire posed the question, and they said there might be a vote. Who fucking cares if there's a vote? But it's an interesting question. Who's the better band, Scott? Rage Against the Machine or System of a Down? Wow, that's a tough discussion. Both politically motivated bands, both really super unique in their approach. One has kind of a rap-based foundation to their approach. The other one has roots from their homeland, which they've incorporated into their music, which they're both great. We've talked about them both. We both love them both. Which one's the better band? I am really struggling with this one because I can't decide. I love them both.
Both have short catalogs,
which actually played in their favor for both of them.
Yeah, but it makes them more, you know, parallel, if you will,
yeah,
because there isn't a lot of music here, you know what I mean, to talk about. So,
right.
And both are kind of avant-garde at times in their approach, right? So they can both be a little artsy at times.
Yes. Yes. That's why this is such an interesting thought experiment.
Oh my gosh. That is tough.
It is tough.
I'm going to, man.
I can tell you I'm leaning one way, like, and not that the other one's bad, but I am kind of, and I'll explain my rationale, but go ahead.
My heart says Rage Against the Machine, but my brain says System of a Down.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, my heart says, you know, Scott, if you're honest, you probably have more fun listening to Rage. But then I'm thinking there's more meat on the bone with System, because Rage kind of does one thing. You know what I mean? And with System of a Down, you get like a kaleidoscope of musical colors, right? Yep. Whereas Rage pretty much does one thing. They do it really, really well, and it can get a little weird and experimental, but it's still kind of like Zach is always going to have that certain vocal delivery. You know what I mean? There's a certain thing they do that they do really, really well. But Sowed is like, there's just a kaleidoscope of musical potential there. So I'm going to say I'm probably more likely to reach for a System of a Down record at this point in my life than I am a Rage Against the Machine record, but I love Rage.
Yeah, actually same for me. I love Rage. I love everything they do. From a certain perspective, you can say they're kind of a one-trick pony, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. AC/DC, same thing, yeah. Right? How many bands are quote-unquote one-trick ponies and do it really fucking well? Having said that, I would lean System of a Down for the exact same reason. They're really kind of, they're more out of the box. I like out of the box stuff. I mean, we've talked about some of my weird musical tastes, and I like out of the box stuff, and they're profoundly more out of the box than Rage Against the Machine is, in my opinion. They have the kaleidoscope of, to use your word, and I love how they incorporate musical style from, what is it, Albania, I think, right? Wherever they're from in the Middle East, right? They've incorporated that into their music, and I think that's a really interesting and great combination, and it really makes what they do super fucking unique. And so I would also lean Rage Against the Machine for all the same reasons.
Yeah, I mean, Rage is
System of a Down, I meant. Yeah,
right. There's nothing wrong with being a specialist, and I think right. Rage are specialists and they do it exceptionally well. But you know, System of a Down, probably, like, if you took like kind of like your middle of the road, maybe hard rocker metal fan, and said, you know, choose one, they're probably going to gravitate towards Rage, because for as angry and kind of political and you know, fiery as their music is, it's still more user friendly than System of a Down. System of a Down can almost be like abrasive at times, you know, right. That. And so there's just like System of a Down just has that, those sharper kind of edges to what they do. You know, it's a little more gnarly, a little more hairy. Yep. And I just find that kind of interesting. And they balance it against some really beautiful passages too. So
for sure. They do make you work a little bit more for their music than Rage does, which yep. I personally don't have a problem with that. Some people might. I don't think you have a problem with that. Dude, we both love Rage. We both do. But I think we both are in unison on why we would go with Soad. They're just all, for all those reasons, for sure.
A final thought before you move yeah. on. My favorite Rage record is Evil Empire. And I thought the first one sounded kind of like basic metal rap, and then on Empire they got weird, they got more experimental with the effects, and it was just a little more kind of angular and, you know, odd sounding. So it was tapping in a little bit of that System of a Down thing, and then with their last record, Battle of Los Angeles, they seem to kind of like refine that and make yep. it kind of more of a polished thing. So I really liked them at their best when they were more ragged, like I kind of see System of a Down.
Right. Cool. Well, hey, listen, before we get to our part two of our little game, I'm going to throw you a big giant curveball here. I know you'll be able to answer this. I just thought of this and I saw a little short on YouTube about this. We all know that Eddie Van Halen wanted Patti Smyth to be the lead after David Lee Roth left. What I saw was she declined because of how much they drank, and she was not a drinker, and she said she forever regretted it after that. She forever regretted turning them down. Interestingly enough, before I asked the question, Eddie Van Halen asked her to not say anything to anybody that he asked her because he didn't want Sammy Hagar to feel like he was the second choice, which I thought was thoughtful. But my question to you is, how would Van Halen have fared if Patti Smyth was the lead singer in the band? We've never talked about that.
Yeah, I don't think it would have gone over well.
Which, is she the type, because I don't purport to have the ability to answer that question as much as you can, but she just doesn't seem like the right fit for the kind of music that they played, right? What do you think he wanted in her when he wanted her to be the lead singer? Do you have any idea on that? You've read books about it, I'm sure.
I think he probably wanted, well, he was coming out of the David Lee Roth era, so I think he was looking for someone who could carry a note. You know, I think he was looking for someone who wasn't so much focused on just the show, right? He wanted more of a nuanced and thoughtful musical collaborator. I think Eddie, being the consummate musician, was really seeking a fellow musician to kind of work with and write with, whereas Roth was never that. So I think that might have been, and I think he was just looking for a left turn. I think when you're coming out of like 10 years with David Lee Roth, he probably had a pounding headache and was like, I just want something else, you know, to do.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have gone over well. And I think it dovetails nicely into some of what this podcast is about. We're talking about the mid 80s. We're talking about hyper masculine rock and roll. We're talking about a large degree of like chauvinism within both the fan base and the business. Yep. And especially in the world of heavy metal, which, sorry, Van Halen were, you know, classified as that back then. So I think on a number of levels, it would not have worked out well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I wouldn't have minded if they would have gone Gary Cherone and just put out one album just to see what it would have sounded like. But
you mean, Patty?
Like the Gary Cherone version, where they did one album and then it didn't work out. At least we would have had a kind of a taste of what he had in mind. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Sadly, we'll never get that, but, all right. On to part two of our little fun game here. So I'm gonna give you what Loudwire says is this particular artist/band's worst album, and you get to tell them if they are right or wrong. So are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. I don't know if I am. Okay. So Alice Cooper. Loudwire says Alice Cooper's worst album is Welcome to My Nightmare Part 2 from 2011.
That album has some decent moments on it. He's got the original band performing on a couple tracks. They're pretty okay. He does a duet with Kesha on there. That's just weird.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, it's just kind of a disco track, and you know, it's not a great album, but it's not horrible. I actually think his last record, Road, that he put out was pretty uninspired. So. You know, maybe that one I would probably nominate as the worst.
Got it. All right, here we go. Anthrax. They were also on the best list. They say Anthrax's worst album is Volume 8, The Threat Is Real, from 1998.
John Bush era, third John Bush album. Yeah, not super well received. Got kicked off their label. They were on some super tiny label with very little distribution. This thing went into record stores for a week and vanished forever. I'm serious. I don't think it's in print anymore. honestly. And they had that happen to them. They got signed to Elektra on the heels of the Black Album by Metallica's success. Elektra was Metallica's label. And so they were like, ooh, we need more of these thrash bands. We can sell a gazillion albums. So they signed Anthrax, and Anthrax put out like this super kind of Black Album-ish 90s pseudo grunge record called Sound of White Noise, which is great. But they quickly, like, that bubble burst and Elektra dropped them, and they spent like the rest of the 90s floating from odd distribution label, one-off label deals, just no support. It's not an Anthrax record I go to often. Is it their worst? Yeah, I could take that. I could see it.
I mean, it's in a bad year, though, dude. Look, it's 1998. We're in fucking Weepy Rock. We're in Creedville. We're in Creed. We're in Live. We're in Nickelback. We're in that kind of music here. And I just don't feel like this is a good spot for Anthrax anymore. Like, the time for Anthrax-style thrash music is, like, 7 to 10 years gone by now. And is this like more of a thrashy album?
It's more like it's more like 90s metal, where it's a little more grungy, a little even kind of new metal in places, so it's kind of skewing towards that direction,
like Pantera-ish, kind of
a little bit like Pantera-ish, a little bit of groove metal in there. It's not 80s thrash at all. Dimebag plays on it. Dimebag plays on these 90s Anthrax albums. So if for no other reason, you listen to it for the guitar solos.
Well, good point.
Yeah,
they're always good to listen. But even with that kind of music, wouldn't this still be kind of misplaced in 1998? Or do you think that's an appropriate spot for an album like this?
I mean, it sounded of the time, but again, it just didn't have any distribution. I mean, they had a different singer during this era, so they didn't have high-pitched
Belladonna. Yeah.
They didn't have him. They had John Bush, so they had a guy with a 90s singing voice. So sonically, it fit the era, but again, it's just, you know, they have the stink of the 80s on them, so I don't think anything 80s went over particularly well in the 90s. And just, again, no support, no marketing or distribution support from
them. And with a different vocalist and a different style of music, then it just didn't sound like them, and people probably didn't buy into it because it was different enough that people couldn't latch onto it.
That's right. You've turned off your original fans, and you're too old and 80s, you know, to attract any new ones.
All right. Moving along, Black Sabbath. You ready? They say that Forbidden is Black Sabbath's worst album.
Yeah,
1995.
Yeah, that's a get out of a contract album. The reunion with Ozzy was on the horizon. Sharon was pulling the strings behind the scenes, and Ozzy was imminent that they were going to reunite with Ozzy. And so they had to cut this final record with Tony Martin. It's pretty much a crap fest. Yeah, they're going to reissue it this month, actually. So,
oh yeah, but it'll be like retro-y and cool, because it's one of those like deep cut albums that suck that everybody's going to start liking now, right?
That's kind of true. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if you don't have an opinion on this one, that's fine. Deep Purple. They say their worst album is Bananas from 2003.
Oh, that would be opinion on that. Steve Morse album, I think. Steve Morse from the Dixie Dregs on guitar there. Yeah, I haven't heard it. No opinion on that. But Deep Purple's catalog is so gigantic and so full of peaks and valleys that, you know, sure, it makes sense some later era record would be the worst.
Yeah, here's another later era one. Def Leppard, Songs from the Sparkle Lounge, they say is their worst one.
Listen, I am not embarrassed to admit that I love Def Leppard, and I struggle to connect with any of their records after like 1990. I really do. I try.
Why would you want to? Because all of their best stuff was in the 80s.
I try. I give everyone, and honest to God, I give everyone a real try. I'll spin everyone, and I'm like, maybe they will recapture some of that magic, and I just cannot connect to any of their records. But after like Hysteria. But anyway, but I've read that it's either their album X or this album is their worst. So, you know, sure. Basically anything after Hysteria is not very good.
All right. All right, cool. Let's move along. Dio, Anger Machines, 1996.
Not familiar with that one. It's kind of a lost era for me with Dio. Although recently I pulled up Killing the Dragon on Spotify and was listening to it. But so I'm trying to, I've got to educate myself on these later era Dio albums. So it's on the to-do list. Can't answer.
All right. These next four, and then we'll wrap it up. These four are too good to pass up. And if we go over, then that's fine. Guns N' Roses, Chinese Democracy.
Yes. No, wait a minute. Actually, I don't care for the Illusion albums either. Yes.
Okay. All right. Iron Maiden, Virtual 11, 98.
Yeah, not good.
Okay. Here we go. Judas Priest, Demolition, 2001.
Oh, our local guy, Tim Ripper Owens on vocals.
Ripper.
I don't like those records Priest did with Ripper. It's too heavy. It's going to sound crazy, but for Priest, it's too fucking thrashy heavy metal. That's not Priest, man. I don't like when Priest does that. I want Priest to sound kind of retro.
Retro 70s, like yes. Chunky, like fucking Marshall amps, right?
Yeah, sound right. Like Hellbent for Leather, please.
Yes. All right, and finally, Kiss, Hot in the Shade, 1989.
Okay, 80s Kiss has been on my to-do list for literally 40 years. I don't know this record. I don't know this record very well, but I routinely see it come up on worst of lists. So I'm almost tempted to just spin it just to hear how bad it gets. But I'm automatically turned off because it's like 15 fucking tracks. Do right. We need 15 tracks of an 80s Kiss album? Give me eight tracks and be done. That's seven tracks too many. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. And you know, ladies and gentlemen out there, you know, there might be a reanimator in the future with some of these 80s Kiss albums. So we might see something like that. So
Rico, that is a great idea. If for no other reason than I know you're a 70s Kiss Army member who hates the 80s Kiss. I would just love to see you torture yourself working through those records to try to come up with one decent Kiss album. I would need
it. I know it would be hell for me, which is kind of why I want to do it. It's like my version of Hellraiser, like where I self-torture because you love the pain. That would be me. All right, hey, listen, want to take a quick break?
Let's do it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk garbage, dude. So stick around.
Looking for a good rock and roll book? Do you watch a ton of rock and roll documentaries like I do? Well, that's why I started the Rock Talk Studio podcast, to be the place to go for previews, reviews, and recommendations of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies. Every first Tuesday of the month, the Rock Talk Studio gets you caught up on all the latest and points out where to go for the good stuff. Give me 20 minutes and I'll get you caught up on the world of rock and roll books, docs, and movies from every possible angle and leave you with a no-doubt decision on where to spend your time and money. Fan or just casual fan, or maybe you're on the fence and just looking for something new to check out. Either way, I got you covered. Recently on the show, I've talked about books and documentaries from everyone and everything from David Bowie, Randy Rhoads, and the Allman Brothers, to the Abbey Road Studios, Cheap Trick, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Little Richard, and more. Join me, Big Rick, every Tuesday of the month as I host a Rock Talk Studio podcast, the ultimate review of rock and roll books, documentaries, and movies.
Our Mind on Music is a podcast that covers all things music. We cover all genres and we welcome all perspectives, from musicians, producers, and content creators to music enthusiasts. We have discussions, interviews, opinions, and much, much more. We hope you'll join us every week. Our Mind on Music on YouTube and all streaming platforms.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born, the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll, gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm. A sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and children of all ages, once again, we express our eternal gratitude for taking the time to listen to us. That is pretty fucking amazing. Now go find somebody. Listen, Mark and Carlos can't be the only two people that are super enthusiastic about this podcast. You got to go out and find some more of you and grow the what are we going to call ourselves, Scott? Grow the, like, what do we're like the Kiss Army. We can't be the RNRA Army. Like, what,
the
we're
beehive?
Like the beehive. Can we be the beehive? Can we be like, what are we,
the Swifties?
All right, hey, maybe somebody out there can name our group that we're trying to, like, the Kiss Army. How about somebody out there come up with a cool name that we can call ourselves, like the group of us? So find somebody and make them listen, goddammit. I think they might have some fun with this. So anyways, dude, we've got Stupid Girl by Garbage, Shirley Manson, Scott, right?
Swing, swing, tentpole.
This is a 1996 joint. Hey, man, Garbage is a Butch Vig joint, by the way. That is a Butch Vig masterpiece. So again, 1996, Butch Vig and the guys wrote the music before Shirley Manson joined the band. Shirley Manson wrote the lyrics. We'll get into that. But I don't know, dude. Did it kill rock? That's why we're fucking doing this, so we can find out. I got to tell you real quick, though, that I thought when I picked this song, because we take turns picking songs sometimes, and I thought that this song was going to be like one of those fish in the barrel songs. Like, we never know where the science is going to turn out, but some songs are more fish in the barrel-y than others, and I thought this was going to be one of those songs, but the more I thought about it and the more I listened to it, like, the more complicated and the more difficult it got in my brain, so I have no idea what the fuck's going to happen with this tonight. I just want to warn you.
Well, Rico, that would be what, nice segue, that would be why we have our proprietary science. That's right. That is what we are going to employ to determine if Stupid Girl by Garbage did in fact kill rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Rock and Roll Autopsy, and this is what we do. Do not try this at home. Leave it to the professionals. You'll get hurt. Our proprietary science consists of five categories that I have to read off of a piece of paper after 127 episodes.
That's okay. I have trouble remembering them too.
They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, the artist is Garbage. The artist is Garbage. The song is Stupid Girl. What's the name of this album again? It's just self-titled, right?
Yes, self-titled album.
The album is self-titled. That means it is Garbage. The category is gratuitous boomerism. Rico, what say you?
God damn it, man. All right. So does this song, could this song translate to a different time? Like, the song came out in the mid-90s, right in the thick of it. Would this song fit in the aughts? Yeah, it would fit in the aughts. Would this song fit in the teens? Yeah, it sure would. Would this song fit now? It would. Vig is a boomer, and he wrote the music part of it with the rest of the guys. He is a boomer, but Shirley Manson is not, actually. I looked. I did your job for you this one time. Vig was born in 55, and Manson was born in 66. So even though she's on the lower end, she's still a Gen Xer. Yeah, this song would fit anywhere. So I'm going to say that it's going to get a zero for me.
I agree. I'm going to give it a zero as well. We're going to talk about the lyrics shortly, but yep. I think that this song and the potentially self-depreciating nature of its lyrics, in my estimation, fit quite nicely into the stereotype of a Gen Xer, right? Self-loathing.
Oh, and you hit the nail on the head, and that was kind of my light bulb moment going into our next category, actually. And I think we're both thinking the same thing, actually, which is interesting.
Well, let's not waste another minute. Let's move on. Category two is excessive misogyny. And I've got the lyrics available. They're right in front of me, Rico. I've pulled them up on this thing called the internet.
What the fuck is the internet?
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to bitch about movies and share pornography with one another.
Wow, dude, and nobody's better at reading shit off the internet than we are, so go ahead and hit me.
Do you pretend you're high, pretend you're bored, pretend you're anything just to be adored? And what you need is what you get. Don't believe in fear. Don't believe in faith. Don't believe in anything that you can't break. You stupid girl, all you had, you wasted, all you had, you wasted. Do you want more lyrics, Rico?
I'm good if you are.
I think I'm good.
So before I read her little bio section in Wikipedia, I went about 17 different directions on these lyrics, right? Until I read her bio. Did you happen to read her? Hey, it's Wiki, and that's what we do. Did you happen to read it by chance? I can give you kind of like the truncated, paraphrased version if you would like.
Dear listener, I want you to know that I put every ounce of effort into every episode. I would never, ever shortchange you. We've just thanked you at the top for tuning in. And believe me, every week I think to myself, self, do not let these people down. God damn it, Scott. Look at me. Look in the mirror. Don't you dare let these people down. You do your research. You read Wikipedia.
So in other words, sadly, you did not follow through.
I didn't follow through. Like everyone else in life, I let them down.
That's okay. So essentially, she was like, as a kid, until she hit their verse, she's from Scotland, right? And so essentially, until she hit high school, she was involved in all kinds of shit. Like, she learned how to play multiple instruments. She was in ballet. She, you know, was in voice. She was like super, like her dad was a university lecturer, and her mom was a big band singer. So she lived a good life as a child, and her parents had her involved in everything, and apparently she was pretty good at it, right? Until she hit high school, was bullied in high school, then she hit depression and became a cutter, right? And then she got involved with the wrong crowd and then kind of ran with that and wound up in a band. So until I read that, I went into 50,000 directions about what could be my interpretation of this song. And then after I read that, this song is autobiographical, in my opinion. It's her talking about herself in a self-loathing way, but instead of her cutting herself, she's cutting herself with words this time around. I think that's exactly what's going on here. This is just another version of her punishing herself for she's hearing her parents say, you had all this potential and look at all the things that you were involved in, and you wound up a singer in some stupid rock band, right? I can just hear it, right? Like, because we've all had those moments with our parents, right? And so she's essentially is there excessive misogyny in here? I guess from a point of view, she's kind of doing it to herself, right? So can I give her a full point? Yeah, I'm going to give her a full point. No, I'm going to split the difference and give a half point because she is beating the hell out of herself, in my opinion. But I can't punish her for beating the hell out of herself, if that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's just the way it's going to be. It's going to be a half point.
It makes a ton of sense, and so much so that I'm going to score it a half point as well. You know, it's interesting because we don't see a lot of this. Typically, when we see, you know, we see a lot of girl power songs. We see a lot of women lamenting the patriarchy songs. We see a lot of women talking about how disconnected the man in their life is song, right? But this kind of song where the frustration is turned inward, we don't often see, at least right. That I'm aware of in the world of kind of, you know, women in rock. And so I am, maybe you could make an argument, I guess we could go back to Doll Parts from a week or two ago, that there was a little bit in there with that, with the whole unrequited love thing. But
yeah,
but this is legitimately kind of dark, you know, and kind of self-loathing that we don't typically see. And so, you know, I dig it. I think it's compelling. I think it's kind of cool. I think it's a neat kind of twist. I could see people who maybe in today's with, you know, in today's world might look at it and just see the title and kind of be, you know, and maybe just hear the chorus. If you're not really listening to the lyrics and you just kind of hear stupid girl repeated in the chorus, I could see where if you didn't dig a little deeper, one might be put off by that and maybe see it from the wrong perspective. But I agree. I'm going to score it a 0.5 as well. Let's move on. Category 3. Garbage, Shirley Manson, Butch Vig, and the Gang. The track is Stupid Girl. The category, Wanton Whiteness. Rico, what say you?
Man, like, okay, they're all super white. I mean, being Scottish is really super white, and Butch Vig is super white too, with those glasses and that mustache, which is fine. Facial hair is good. I guess what musically, the song's got a nice groove to it, man. And I don't know if it's, I mean, it's not necessarily white if it's got a cool groove to it, but it's white, dude. I'm going to give it a full one on this one. It's white. Who am I kidding? Science.
Yeah, I actually agree. I'm going to score it a full one as well. It's interesting because if I think back to this time, I can remember it being played like on the dance floor at Thursdays, right? So people would get out and kind of groove to this a little bit, which, you know, so it is a song that inspired a little bit of movement, right? It does have elements of, you know, it's, you know, electronica and dance to it. Butch Vig, man. I mean, this guy he's like a god among 90s record producers. I mean, fucking
no doubt.
Smashing Pumpkins, L7, Sonic Youth, and the diamond, not platinum, not gold, the diamond selling Nevermind by a little band you may not have heard of called Nirvana. But again, just even kind of running in those circles. I mean, just going to call it like I see it. We're going to use pure science here. That was just a white ass scene, you know,
dude. And speaking of record sales, this album, Scott, 4 million sales, double platinum album.
Yeah. Butch had the Midas touch back then.
For sure. Like he's like the Rick Rubin kind of in a way.
Yeah. But in spite of the fact that this was a cut that was being played on dance floors, when I look back, I remember the music scene being divisive between like the rockers and the, you know, and the rappers and all of that stuff. It wasn't as kind of like, you know, everything's kind of in one big soup today. But back then, there were lines drawn, you know?
Oh, for sure. Like, especially in the 90s, man. Like,
yeah,
there were lines for sure. Agree.
That's just how white folks will do you.
All right. Moving on, category four, malignant machismo. Rico, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate looking back on this song and where and how she grew up and the types of things that she experienced. I think it's, in a way, it's probably, hopefully, cathartic for her to have exposed a part of her like this in the song. You know what I mean? I appreciate the fact that she wrote these lyrics in the way that she did. She has said that it's about missed potential, right? And I think there's a part of her that understands where she started and where she wound up and wrote a song about it. And I appreciate when somebody puts themselves out like that. I'm going to give this one, surprisingly enough, I'm going to give it a plus one for Malignant Machismo because of how, like I said before, how she publicly beats the hell out of herself. And that's going to be a plus one for me.
I'm not going to go quite as far. I'm going to give it a 0.5, but yeah. It's interesting though. You know, it's like, it makes me wonder, you know, I was talking to my mom on Mother's Day and happy Mother's Day belated to all the moms out there. I know yes. We have tons of women listening to this show every week.
Many, many, many.
To hear us drop copious amounts of see you next Tuesdays. You know, and we were talking about my grandma, her mom, and the era that she grew up in and the expectations that were placed on her as someone who was basically in that time, you know, condemned to being a housewife was like the ceiling, right? that you could achieve, you know? So it's just interesting whenever I see this song where a woman is really kind of beating herself up, right? And these are powerful words. They're simple lyrics, but they're powerful. Don't believe in love. Don't believe in hate. Don't believe in anything, right? And, you know, expectations society places on women that differ greatly from men, and that even though on college campuses, like women outnumber the men like 3-1 now, I do believe the future is female. But we still have residue in our society. And it's I think women just kind of have it inherently tougher, you know? And so reading these words, it's hard, man. It's kind of sad. You see someone beating themselves up like this.
Yeah.
You know, over emotions, right? And that it's, you know, so hopefully, especially since you enlightened me in spite of my copious amounts of research on the cutter phase, hopefully, that she went through. It's just tough, man.
But
I guess I'm giving it a 0.5 for being so tough and abrasive.
But like I said in a previous episode, Scott, rain makes things grow. And I'm sure that the rain has made her grow. And I'm sure that writing about this has made her grow as a person. And so, Scott, rain makes things grow, and I'm sure that she's grown from this. So good on her.
All right, let's move on. Our final category, garbage, stupid girl. The category is culture vulturism. Rico, what say you?
Yeah, have you ever heard anything like them, like this song and I'm Only Happy When It Rains and like a lot of the other cool songs from this album? Their sound is very... Very, you can pick them out in a lineup kind of a thing. Vig really hit the nail on the head with this that he created. And her delivery is super unique also. She's kind of like the anti-Courtney Love, where Courtney Love just wanted to just rip it off, rip your face off with her delivery, right? Shirley Manson was very understated, but had the feeling of like a smoldering volcano underneath. And so that's the way I see it anyways. And so I think what this song is very unique, and I don't see anything in like that in this score. So it's going to get a zero from me.
So it utilizes, it does sample and utilize other music. It's got a loop from the Clash's Train in Vain. It's got a sample from REM on here, from Orange Crush. I can't pick it out. They were looking for a bass line intentionally. The instruction was write a bass line like CCR's Suzy Q. So they were very much looking at other influences and quite literally other music, like, you know, using a loop from a Clash song and saying, you know, pen a bass line that like this one, right? So
yeah,
I think one could argue that there's some vulturism there, but it does kind of like beg the question of what is influence versus what is appropriation, right?
Yeah. And yep.
I feel like when I listen to this song, I can't suss out those elements anyway that were borrowed.
Right. That's like ripping off a blues guy and making a blues song. And that's, they took some stuff from other places and made something new out of it. You know what I mean? Something new and different. So it's hard to, if you can't suss out the influences, then there can't be any vulturism there, in my opinion.
Yeah, and for that very reason, I would have to score it a zero as well, because in spite of the fact that while diligently reading Wikipedia right now, doing research on the fly, listen, I'm not cheating you, dear listener. This is I'm just being crafty in the moment, right?
Right,
But yeah, even though we can cite literal moments of influence and maybe appropriation, but I wouldn't go that far. I still think it stands as a unique work and that Garbage has a unique sound. You know a Garbage song when you hear it.
For sure.
All right, Rico, you ready to tally it up, man?
Math time.
Math Let's time. Do it. I've got 2 points, Rico. 2 points.
And I have 2.5
for a grand total of
4.5 on the lower end. Definitely did not kill rock, obviously science works, but it was really close to contributing to rock, which makes total sense. It's right on the lower end. It's right where it ought to be.
I think we had remarked in a previous episode that it would be hard for, or maybe this was in a text discussion, I can't recall, but I think I actually was the one who said it, that it would be hard for, just by design, given the nature of the science, that it would be hard for a female artist to kill rock and roll.
For sure.
Just given the nature of the science. But what makes this examination interesting is that the lyrics do take on, to your point, and score in the excessive misogyny category, that self-loathing, that that anger that's directed inward at the female lead role of the song.
Yep.
Gives it that unique distinction where you're going to have some points adding up here, you know?
Fact. And I kind of, after reading her, I have to pull the curtains back a little bit. I always thought Shirley Manson was really easy on the eyes, if you know what I mean. But yeah. After reading her bio, I kind of feel bad for thinking that now. I kind of take it all back now. But she's a very good looking person, and I'm not going to take it any further than that, because she's kind of damaged because of how she grew up, and I feel bad about that. And so hopefully she's in a good place.
Swing, swing,
tentpole.
Yeah, I feel bad about literally every male thought that I have. You know, they all creep in there.
Jesus, we're not good, dude. Our gender is just not good.
Yeah,
can I just say that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough, man. You got to reconcile with your actions, you know? And like, did you see the meme? This is a meme that's going around on the internet. Did you see the man versus bear meme?
No, maybe you can fill me in.
So women were asked, and I hope I don't butcher this, cause I'm not like the most like up on social media guy, but women were asked, And I don't know in what form, maybe just online, but I'm guessing an informal polling. But they were asked what they would rather run into in the woods, a strange man or a bear. And women, like in vast, large quantities, said, give me the bear. You know,
I would
much rather run into the bear in the woods. And of course, dudes were like aghast. What do you mean? Bears are, you know, they're dangerous. And, you know, like this. And it's like you're, and women are like, you're totally missing the point. My wife tells me stories about how, you know, she would always, like, there's certain things that women go through just to navigate their day. You know, they get in the car, they make sure the door is locked immediately. You know, if they're walking in a parking deck or something, they've got, you know, they've got like the mace or something in their hand, or their keys kind of positioned like brass knuckles or something, just in case. They check the back seat of their car. You know, they, women kind of live their lives in fear of men in a lot of ways, and they don't know which men to trust and which men to let in. And then when men hear this, we're such dummies that we get upset about it.
Dude, we're gross pigs is what we are, that are like, we're 12-year-old gross pigs is the reality of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I conduct myself that way, but I, you know, if I ever had a transgression as a younger man finding his way, you know, apologies, but I try not to be creepy guy. I try to be better behaved, but sometimes it's just being short, you know, or I'm someone who's often direct, and that can be, you know, interpreted as mean, you know? And so, you know, I've had those meetings with HR before, but
yeah, we talked about your walk of shame a girl would not find herself, a female would not find herself in that situation, because she would probably conduct herself in a different way because she has the ability to. We're blockheaded, man, and we do dumb shit like that sometimes.
Yeah, and you just, you know, and you got to deal with those ramifications. So there was the man versus bear, and then the other one that I saw online that was the battle of the sexes thing was basically the idea that men live their lives without compliments, because anytime a woman gives a man a compliment, the man interprets it as her saying, I love you, will you marry me? And so men don't know how to take compliments from women, because we look at them as like, oh, they're interested in me, when she just might be saying something nice about you. And so as a result, women just don't compliment men. And so it becomes like a cycle that feeds itself, where you have men that desperately need some kind of affirmation, and then women who just won't give it, because anytime they say something nice to a guy, the guy thinks that, oh, she's in love with me.
Well, we're emotionally toddlers, and it's you can't handle big people stuff like that. It's kind of like in the movie When Harry Met Sally, when they're talking about guys being friends with girls, and Billy Crystal says to Meg Ryan, guys and girls could never be friends because the sex part always gets in the way.
Yeah.
And it's exactly true. Men are emotionally toddlers. And so to give a man a compliment is perhaps, to your point, vastly needed in order to help them grow as a person. They can't handle it. And they always puke on themselves afterwards.
Well, I will admit that I've definitely in my life misinterpreted kind words before as interest. And so I will admit that. So as a result, I just don't get any kind words.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, me too.
You just go through life with no one ever saying anything nice about you from the opposite sex.
And then you turn into a grouchy old man, and people call you get off my lawn guy. So what happens? Nobody is nice to the guy, and then they turn into Clint Eastwood in Torino, and that's what happens.
Get off my lawn.
All right, man. Well, you know, there's no hope we'll ever figure it out, Rico.
Probably not. Well, you know what they say about, you know, men are the XY chromosome, right?
Yeah.
And they say the Y is a broken X. So we're broken. We're broken females, essentially is what that means.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, man, because like I do a lot of talking on this podcast, but outside of the podcast, I really am not interested in like conversation or connecting with people. And I find as I get older, that's only becoming more and more pronounced. I'm like, yeah, the world, interactions, vastly overrated. Don't want any of that in my life. All right, man. it's been Rock and Roll Autopsy. Good night now?
Question mark.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mystique. There's no mystique anymore.
To the dawn, love it, hey, to the morning, I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.